I got sober July 20th, 2009. This is my home group. I have a sponsor, and I have the privilege of sponsoring a few other men today. I just found out I was, like, Amanda pulled the same move that we pull in the 15-minute speakers, you know, where she grabs you in the parking lot right before the meeting, and it's like, hey, you're speaking. I was like, oh, God, not tonight, you know? But I don't say no to AA, you know what I mean? If I'm physically capable to perform a task that I'm asked to perform, I just do it. And I was taught that my very first night at this meeting. I asked, I was just like standing around and watching everybody that was actually sober, like doing stuff, you know? And next thing I know, I'm vacuuming this room, and I'm just thinking to myself, this is slavery. I hate this place, you know. And I hope that didn't offend anybody. It was not slavery in any way. It's a terrible comparison. But you know, so I ran over to the guy that was a service coordinator or whatever, and I was like, he told me I had to do this. And he was like, is he your sponsor? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, all right, I don't see the problem, you know. And so that's how I got sober, right? Like, right out of the gate. It's sponsor says do this, do it, you know. And I had no idea that that's what I was walking into. You know, I might have, I don't know, it took me, in my opinion, it took me a while to get here. It might have taken me a little bit longer if I actually knew what was happening here. When I came here, I didn't want to stop drinking. I wanted to control my drinking, and I wanted people that would listen to me whenever I had another bad run, and listen to me complain and whine and all that stuff, and all that kind of, you know, that's where my mind was at, because I watched Fight Club and Law and Order a lot, and that's what AA looks like in on TV, you know. But I can relate to Evelyn's story a lot. I was sitting there thinking, listening and thinking about it, and it's kind of like how my sponsor story is. Like, same, but different, you know? Like, a lot of differences. Like, nobody in my family's got, like, a white house and a white picket fence and a white dog. I grew up in a trailer, you know? My sister is far from, like, all-American girl. She's crazy. And, you know, but successful at the same time and doesn't really hurt anybody. So, you know, she can do her thing. She drinks and eats mushrooms and, you know, gets high all the time, you know what I mean, and nothing's on fire, so I don't care, you know what I mean. But my dad, man, you want to talk about, like, he's like Clint Eastwood except not famous, you know what I mean, like, just lots of chest hair, fishing all the time, smoking all the time, work like 70 hours a week, no I love yous, no hugs, no I'm proud of you, none of that, you know. Emotion was not a word that guy knows about, you know. And but my mom, something happened, like, right around, I don't know, I guess I was eight, nine years old, something, the switch flipped, you know, in her head, and it went all downhill, you know what I mean. I watched my mom over a 10-year period progressively kill herself, and at times try to kill herself just right there. And you know, she had a lot of problems going on in the whole head there. And, you know, by the end of that 10-year run, she's taking like 85 pills a day. She's in and out of being lucid. You know, when I got home from school, I never knew which mom was going to be there, you know? You know, so all that's going, that's my home life. And then, you know, in school, I get in fights and I get straight A's, you know. It was just like that. And every night after school, I played sports, you know. If it was playing football in the street until the lights came on, or if it was baseball season, you know, it didn't matter. If there was a foot of water on the field, I was yelling at my parents that I had to go to practice, you know. That was something that I had an obsession with, that kind of like I did with alcohol later on. Nobody in my family's an alcoholic except for me. I know that because when I got here, I heard a lot of people talk about their brother and sister and dad and uncle, and it's hereditary. That's what I was hearing. I'm not saying that's what they were saying, but I was hearing that it was hereditary. So I think at like a month sober, I did a family tree, and I'm the only one. You know what I mean? The apple fell far from the tree. And you know, so I can't blame my alcoholism. I don't know what to blame my alcoholism on, you know. I think it had something to do with Smirnoff Ice and whiskey. That stuff played a role, you know, because the first time I drank, it was Bacardi 151, and it was terrible, you know. It tasted horrible. It burned going down. I blacked out right away, you know. I woke up the next morning, and It wasn't a night that I thought, I want to do that again. There was nothing about that night that I ever wanted to experience again. It cost me baseball, you know what I mean? I had a full ride to a Division I school that's, like, really good, you know? College paid for. Go play your favorite game, kid. You know, we'll give you an education. And I lost that due to that one night of drinking. I was like, man, I'm never doing this again, you know? And, you know, the next year, I'm a late bloomer, so I don't start drinking until I'm, like, 18, right? Senior year in high school, I'm drinking. And, you know, it was after a football game. We're at a party, you know, just regular high school house party. I didn't have a girlfriend, and all my friends did. I had internet girlfriends, but nobody believed me about them, you know? So I needed, like, one that they could see. And I didn't know how to do that because I was, like I was saying, I was socially awkward. You know, before school started, like when you get there early before the first bell, I hung out with kids that didn't speak English, you know? I don't know why, but I hung out with this group of Colombian kids. And I had no idea. I knew the bad words. So when they said bad words, I would laugh because I knew that they were saying bad words. But that was it. You know, I was a four-sport athlete, and I couldn't hang out with any of my teammates. You know what I mean? I just couldn't do it. So I can't talk to girls, that's for sure. And I'm really angry. I'm still, like, just getting in fights all the time and all that. And I pick up a bunch of cases of Smirnoff Ice and go to this house party. And my plan was to get some, you know, some girl drunk, and then she would maybe find me attractive and come home with me, you know? And I'm passing them out and everything, and I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. Looking back at it, it's extremely creepy and weird. You know, Blair pointed that out to me that night. You know, I don't think he even knew where he was, but he figured out that what I was doing was not right. You know what I mean? And, you know, so I started drinking the Smirnoff Ices. And it hit me, man. It hit me. We all know that feeling, you know, where like everything just feels good out of nowhere, you know. And it hit me like a train, like, oh my god, wait, what's this? This is different. This isn't what I'm used to. The head isn't, my head sounds, last weekend I had four kids between the ages of 9 and 12, I think, in my vehicle. And yeah, Bruno Mars or something like that came on, and them screaming at the top of their lungs, and just, they were all over the car. I'm listening and I'm looking at it, and I was thinking, that's what my head sounds like. Like, that reminds me of my head just going at it, you know, all the time. And that got quiet. And, man, I was talking to anybody. I saw myself in a mirror, and I was like, man, you look good, you know. And I wasn't dressed like I am tonight. I wouldn't be dressed like this to speak, guys. I feel really weird. It's Amanda's fault. But, you know, my sponsor taught me to wear a suit, you know, show respect for AA. So, anyways, that night, I wasn't even dressed like that, you know. I'm big, baggy jeans, underwear hanging out, wife beater, do-rag, black and mild, Smirnoff Ice. You know, like, that's where I was at. And I'll tell you what, man, there was nothing you could tell me that would make me think that I did not have it going on, you know. Nothing crazy happened that night. I'm pretty sure I blacked out. But I know Monday, everybody was like, you're a wild man. That was awesome. Get some more Smirnoff Ice this weekend. And that was it. In Bill's story, he says, I had arrived. And I didn't say that to myself that morning. I just thought, cool, you know. But and I definitely didn't think, I want to do that again tomorrow morning. And I wasn't even, like, big on the idea of doing it the next weekend. You know, I was like, maybe in a few weeks, you know. I was the only kid at my school that I knew of that had a fake ID, so I started buying the beer every weekend. And I started drinking the beer every weekend, and I wasn't suffering any consequences, you know. And then it got a little weird when I called somebody on a Tuesday night. We had a midterm the next day, and they're like, hey, you know, so what's going on? I was like, oh, I just got done studying for a little bit. They were like, you sound funny. And I was like, yeah, I drink a 12-pack of Bud Light. So what's going on with you? And they were like, wait, it's Tuesday night, man. We got a midterm tomorrow. What are you doing drinking? And I was like, you're not? You know, like, and it didn't dawn on me that was even happening, you know. And then I put the 12-pack with all the empty bottles in my bathroom. And my dad wakes me up the next morning at like 4 in the morning because he's going to work. And he's like, whose is this? And I was like, it's my friend Dan's. And he's like, Dan hasn't even been here, you know, and adamant liar. You know what I mean? Just like caught red-handed and can't own up to it, you know. And my dad, man, I don't know. He must have seen this shit coming when I was born or something, because he was always just adamantly against me drinking, you know? And even my mom and her insanity would never, like, she would never support it. She wouldn't buy me alcohol. She wouldn't take me to parties where, like, it looked like there was going to be drinking or thought there was going to be drinking, that kind of stuff. But, you know, my drinking started, like, picking up a little bit. And that summer, I'm a bum, you know? I had every opportunity afforded to me, and I threw it all away, you know? And so that summer, I'm, like, breaking into people's cars at night and stealing, like, radios and golf clubs and baseball bats and surfboards and ashtray change is really big. That's, like, the lottery, you know, because you don't have to wait until Plato's Closet or Played Against Sports opens up to get cash. You got ashtray change, man. You can get, you know, Black & Miles and Smirnoff Ice right then. You know, the gas station takes it happily. So I'm doing that every night, you know, and the end of the summer, I come out of a blackout one morning, and there's a person there that I don't know, and that person calls me a couple months later, and she's pregnant. I have a 10-year-old son now. He's amazing. My little boy's amazing. I didn't know what I was missing, you know? I walked away from that kid for a year and a half, you know? Basically, my story is it's Groundhog Day, right? I wake up, I say I'm not going to drink because I did something really stupid the night before, and somewhere in the afternoon, I start blaming it on some circumstance, you know? You know, if I wasn't drinking with that guy, or if I didn't drink tequila, or it was that bar, or I had too much cash in my pocket, or something, you know? There was always a reason why I got out of control the night before, and and then I would inform the people that were closest to me that I figured out how to drink safely for an evening, and they would argue with me because they knew better. And what they didn't know is that an obsession had taken place, and the wheels were going. There was no stopping me, right? You know, then I get to the bar and I'd have like a 2-drink limit, you know, like I'm going to have 2 drinks and go. And so I'd order 2 pitchers, and that wasn't it. You know what I mean? I wasn't even done after that. They would even allow that. They would be like, okay, you can have 2 pitchers, smartass, you know, whatever, just 2 though. And after that second one, I'd be like, oh, look, my old friend from second grade just walked in. I got to buy him a drink, you know, or, oh, I'm really hungry. Let's get some hot dogs and more drinks, you know. And it was always just something else to get more drinks. The deal is like I didn't stop drinking until something intervened on me, right? Or I ran out. It just, that's how it was. So a lot of times in the big book, it talks about pitiful and comprehensible demoralization. Man, that's cool, but that's got nothing to do with me getting sober. That's just the God's honest truth. I peed my pants more times than I care to. Like, I could try to figure out a number, and I'm sure I would still, like, underestimate by a lot, you know? I'm peeing my pants everywhere. I'm peeing in other people's beds. I'm waking up naked in, like, front yards. You know, I'm in and out of jail now, and my mom died. My mom died right before I turned 19, and that's important because anytime anybody questioned me about my drinking or tried to intervene on my drinking, I had a card. You know what I mean? My mom's dead. Get off my back. You know, you would drink too, and people typically did. Just okay. You know, he'll work it out. You know, something like that. But So like I said, Groundhog Day, right? Wake up, don't want to drink, change my mind, wheels get to going. Next thing I know, I got a drink in me. I have absolutely no intention on drinking any more than 2. Pee my pants, you know. Go to jail. Come out of a blackout on a motorcycle in South Carolina. You know, it's cold and don't know what the hell's going on. That kind of stuff's happening, man. And you know, I start ending up, I was up in Philly for a little while. I thought if I moved to Philadelphia, I could get my life together. Within 24 hours, I'm drunk, you know, embarrassing myself, doing stuff that, you know, James knows you could easily get killed for, you know, out there running my mouth in a way that was not good for my well-being. And I found a little bar. It sounded like the one that Evelyn worked at. It had sticky floors, and there was, like, Red Door smoke all the time, and just the trashiest women you could imagine, and then restaurant guys, you know what I mean? Nothing but guys that just got off their shift, and they had a 23-ounce Yingling for $3 and a rocks glass full of Jameson for $8, so $10, that's a round, man, that is a good deal, you know? And I pretty much moved in there. You know, you could either find me at work because I had to work a lot because I wasn't financially responsible. I'm spending, you know, $10 rounds, like three or four rounds get you good and like just lit. And I'm drinking like 9 or 10 of them every night. And, you know, my body's not liking it too much. So every once in a while I detox. I didn't know I was detoxing. I go to detox meetings now and I see what they're going through. And I'm like, man, I used to do that all the time, you know. Just take a couple days off, bud, you know. And, you know, so I'm detoxing in my apartment and, you know, I got this girl who's, you know, her life was pretty good before she ran into me, you know. I met her at a bar. We were both in a blackout. She woke up, you know, and she was like, I guess you could stay, you know. And I was like, of course I'm staying. I don't got nowhere to go. You know, and it was just like that, you know. And, man, I ruined her life, you know. I took everything good from her life. You know, so I'm like, I'm getting Baker-acted. I got doctors taking their best shot. And I'm coming at it like, I'm coming too, sitting down with like priests and rabbis, and I don't know what they're called in the Muslim religion, but those guys, therapists. I got a gym membership at one point. You know, I'm like, I'm more about alcoholism, right? I'm page 30, like trying everything. I started drinking nice wine. You know, because I worked in this nice restaurant and I sold this nice wine, so I knew about it. And trying to sound all sophisticated about the bouquet and the, you know, really, I'm just like, you know, while the other person's not looking, I'm hitting the bottle, you know, chugging wine, you know, $90-$100 bottles of wine. I'm chugging it out of the bottle because I'm classy. And every once in a while, I do something really, really stupid at that dive bar that I really loved. So I'd like go a couple streets over and drink at like the classy bars, you know, like the martini bars. And come to find out, at some point I developed a physical allergy, not like the phenomenon of craving that we have, like a medical one, like that doctors tell you is real bad, where everything would turn red, swell up, I couldn't breathe. They called it like anaphylactic shock or something. If I drank the wrong alcohol, and they didn't know exactly which ones it was, but there was a couple times where they'd hit me with the EpiPen and take me to the hospital because I was dying, you know. And so what I would do, they finally said it's sulfites, you can't have sulfites. So I just found all the beers and liquors that don't have sulfites, good to go, you know. And I walked right back into that same bar and they're like, no, we are not serving you. And I talked them into it, because what they didn't know is that the obsession had already started. There was nothing that was going to stop me, you know. And I couldn't get it together, man. And I'm, you know, as far as my kid goes, I'm nowhere to be found in his life. You know, no money, no showing up, no being a father. And, you know, come back to Tampa, and then the blackout in South Carolina motorcycle thing happens. And I've been suicidal. I tried to kill myself a few times. That might run in my family. You know, a lot of people in my family have either done it or tried it. And, you know, so I'm like, I got a motorcycle. I don't know where the hell I'm at. This is as good as it's going to get. Let's do it, you know. And God just, man, he doesn't want me dead. I'm fine with it. I get it, you know. But try to kill myself again, and I've had a lot of friends die from doing way less and walked away from it unscathed. And the important thing is that a few days before that, I'll spare you the details, but I wound up on the phone with a guy that was sober for 23 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he pegged me right away. I was telling him I had girl problems, work problems, needed an apartment, needed to get some money together, and he listened to all of it real patiently, and then he just said, tell me about your drinking. And I was like, what the hell? What's that got to do with it? But I told him, you know, and then he told me about his drinking. And then he told me he had been sober for 23 years, and he told me that he had done it through Alcoholics Anonymous. And he had been in town a few times, so he knew where, like, clubhouses and meetings were. So he told me exactly where to go that night. And I related to that guy, and I remember thinking, like, man, this guy knows what he's talking about. I think I'm going to check out that AA. Problem was, when I hung up the phone, there was still some Captain Morgan left in the bottle. And I wasn't ready, you know? So I'm in South Carolina, and all I can think about is that conversation with Joe, right? How Joe's sober and Alcoholics Anonymous, and man, his life's a hell of a lot better than mine, you know. And they didn't have Alcoholics Anonymous in that jail that I was in. I found out a couple years ago, I was in a meeting at 3333, and a guy raised his hand and said, hey, I'm Steve, I'm an alcoholic, I'm from Florence, South Carolina. And I was like, Florence? And I asked him after the meeting, I said, you know Effingham Jail? And he said, yeah, we just started a meeting there. Man, I just started crying right there in 3333, because I was dying for it, man. I was in there dying for it. And they just didn't have it at the time. And I got out of there and went to another county. And I'm writing letters home, telling them, oh, I'm sober 90 days, I'm sober 100 days, I'm sober 110 days, I'm never going to drink again. And meant it with everything in me. Everything in me, I meant that. And basically, I get kicked out of South Carolina, right? Like, they, instead of sending me to prison, they just told me to get the hell out of the state. I was okay with that. I wasn't a fan of it anyways, you know? I'm not really familiar with the state, but I know what their jails are like, and if that's any reflection of the rest of it, no, you know? So I got out of there, and I'm staying sober, right? Like, the first two nights, I'm staying with a buddy of mine that's in the Army in Savannah, Georgia, and the first two nights, man, like, at the apartment, they're getting it in, you know? Her and all our Army buddies are just, they're getting ready to go out, and I'm not going out, not because I don't have any money, because I don't want to drink. I'm too scared, right? And they're drinking in front of me, and they're offering me, and they got bottles of Jameson, and they got Yingling, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't, you know, I'm losing my mind, and I'm praying to this God that I don't believe in or hate, and just help me, and I look like a maniac, you know? And then my sister's 30th birthday comes around. I'm back in Tampa, Florida. All her friends are there. All my friends are there. People are asking me how I'm doing, and I just want to go, ah, and run away. You know, I can't. And I know it fixes that, so I went over to the bartender, and I said, hey, man, let me get two Bud Lights. And he, at some point, I guess I had given him, like, a disclaimer, like, don't give me alcohol. I can't drink. And bad things happen, you know? And I go to him and ask him for two Bud Lights, and he remembered that conversation and was like, you told me not to give you any alcohol. And I was like, well, now mind your business and give me the alcohol. Do your job, you know? So he gave it to me, man, and, you know, shortly thereafter, I'm behind the bar stealing bottles of whiskey, you know, just completely gone, you know, out of my mind, drunk. And I tried to go into the hub to get a drink. As soon as I walked in, they were like, get out. So I go outside, and I'm peeing on the door, and I'm screaming, don't you know who I am? And they're like, no, we don't, you know? I don't know why they wouldn't know who I am, you know? But at the time, delusion of grandeur, I thought they should know who I am, you know? And I come to in a bathtub the next morning. It was just like that time that I drank that Bacardi 151, and I was like, oh, no, I can't do this anymore, you know? I can't do this anymore. Problem was, I knew I was going to. There was not a doubt in my mind. Somewhere, I don't know, somewhere along the line, I had realized that the gig was up. I can't not drink. I can't. Not drink, whatever. Does that make sense? So I'm trying to not drink. I'm trying to not drink. I'm trying to not drink. This guy that gave me a shot when I was 20 years old, man, this guy gave me, like, way more than a shot. You know, he showered me with, like, all these gifts. I don't know. It's kind of weird looking back at it, but he loved me, man. He wanted me to be successful, and he mentored me. And he needed somebody to type fast, and that's about all I could do is sling plates and type fast. So my dad paid for a room at this motel over on Kennedy, and not a classy establishment, you know, not a place to get it together. You know, you're surrounded by people. This guy was doing heroin or something. This guy smoking crack. They wanted to hang out. I'm losing my mind, you know. And I got to see my kid the second day back in town, not because his mom was, like, wanting me to rekindle a relationship with him. It was simply because she had to go to Adventure Island and needed a babysitter, and nobody was available, you know. So I got to hang out with him, and just weird, you know, just weird the whole time. I felt terrible the whole time. He asked me why I drank, and I had no idea. And I had to tell him that. I was like, I don't know. And I picked up the phone. A lot of you guys know Stan. I called Stan. Stan and I used to drink. Somehow I memorized his number. Hadn't called him in 5-6 years because he's hanging out with you guys. I don't want to talk to him, you know. He's got nothing at all for me. But I called him. And he came and picked me up that night, and he took me to Yana, and Roger H. was up there talking in his bib overalls or something country like that, you know? And I don't remember a whole lot of what he said. I remember there was something about, like, he won a free turkey. He showed up, and really it was the cops, and he had a warrant out for his arrest, and they locked him up. And I remember thinking, I would have went for the turkey too, Roger. Don't worry, man. You know, I'm with you. And that got my attention. That silly little story got my attention. But one point I remember thinking, this is weird. He knows this stuff, you know. This is weird. And really, the reason, like I said earlier, the reason I called Stan is because, like, I didn't think not drinking was the answer. I thought it was drink normal. Live normal. Normal living. You know what I mean? Kind of what my sister does. Probably more like what Evelyn's family does, right? Live normal. That is the answer. I don't know normal living if it's right here. I don't know it. It's alien to me. It's completely unrecognizable. But I thought that's what you guys were going to teach me how to do. That's why I called Stan, you know? And Stan was different, man, you know? He was not the same guy that I knew when we were drinking. Not at all. It was a completely different person. Some of the stuff had lingered, but for the most part, I mean, I know a lot of you guys knew him when he got here, but man, he was a lot better, and it was very apparent right away, you know? So after that meeting, I'm in the parking lot, and I'm smoking cigarettes, trying to look busy, because I can't talk to people, you know? And Ryan and Lloyd and my sponsor, Ryan, were there, and they came out, and they introduced themselves to me, and they just leveled with me, man. They just talked to me like I was a human being for the first time in my life. Wasn't getting talked down to. You know, wasn't being talked to with like fear or doubt or worry or anxiety. They were talking to me like they've known me, and they took me to the hospital to see our friend Kevin, because he's good at riding mopeds. He shattered his femur in a moped accident, so he's laid up in the hospital with rods in his leg and all that. And we're gonna go see our friend in the hospital, and I'm like, what? How'd it happen? Moped accident. I'm like, lame. You know, like, what's wrong with you guys? So right out the gate, man, like, hey, not really looking too pretty, you know? But there was something far more important going on. There was cement being laid down that I, still today, I'm not sure that I can see 100% clearly, but I know that it has to do with me standing up here tonight. We get to the hospital, and Kevin's little kid was like 8, 9, maybe, something like that. He's running around the room just being an 8 or 9 year old, but he was talking about how much he loved hanging out with his dad. And I was thinking to myself, I don't even know what it's like to hang out with my kid. And I don't know about the rest of the guys, because all those guys that I met over at Yana, they were sober for a few years at the time, you know? And I didn't believe them, you know? Either you're lying, like, you know, you take some drug, you know, instead of alcohol, okay, they'll tell me about it later. Or they're not like me, one of the two, you know? You don't go that long without drinking. Kevin was sober for 6 months, and I could believe that, you know? I could absolutely believe 6 months was legit. And so what happened is I found something in that room that night that I wanted, and I can't tell you the last time that I was sitting within arm's length of somebody that had something I wanted, you know what I mean? Because all I wanted to do was just curl up and die, you know? And I got back to the hotel room that night, and before that, Stan and I hung out at Starbucks, and he was really excited to tell me about the phenomenon of craving and that I was going to die and I had no choice in drinking and your life is over, you know? And I was like, God, you know? What he did, though, with all that fear-mongering is he got me to get a sponsor, you know? He got me to get a sponsor that night, and if you're worried that your sponsor doesn't know what he's doing, it doesn't matter, you know? It does not matter. You know, he got me to get a sponsor, and he knew more about staying sober than I did, you know. And when we got back to the room that night, he said, you believe in God? And I was like, well, I don't believe that God exists, but just in case he does, I hate him, you know. And he was like, good, go pray to that God and thank him for keeping you sober. And I was like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, you know. And I got in the room, and you know, he gave me a big book, and I got in the room, and I read the doctor's opinion, and I read the part about the person who's normal in every respect except for their relationship with alcohol. And I thought, that's me, you know? Looking back, that is not the case at all. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not that guy. I've met a couple of them, you know, but it was not me. I was very opposite of that. But I read that, and I remember he's talking about that, what happens in us, you know, what happens in me when alcohol hits my belly, you know? Like, that's it. There's no more control. I don't have a choice, you know? Everything up here can say, don't do it again, don't do it again, don't do it again. And it happens again and again and again and again. And between, you know, Stan beating it down my throat and then this book, you know, reiterating it. And I was like, man, I got this thing. And I got on my knees and I prayed and I said, God, I don't believe you're there. If you are, I hate you. Thanks for keeping me sober, you know? And I got in bed and I cried myself to sleep that night, you know? And I walked to work the next morning. And Stan picked me up, and he took me to the 10 o'clock at 3333, and I get out of the car, and one of my ex-girlfriends was walking through the parking lot, and I was like, oh, fuck this, I'm out, you know? But while I was thinking that, I thought to myself, if she can stay sober, I can stay sober. I'm going to show her, right? You know? I'm going to get real sober. And I met a couple more people that night, and they just started taking me to meetings, and we hung out at Starbucks every night, was there an exception? I don't think there was an exception. In 2009, you were at Starbucks till 4 a.m. or you were a square, you know, it just lame. And, you know, so we're at Starbucks every night, and, you know, I went to Ficky Paw and Cirque Paw and Men's Advance in D.C., and we're running around doing AA, man. I'm going to Coco all the time, and, you know, just doing AA. And I wasn't working the steps, though, you know. I was just staying sober off the fellowship. I was letting you guys hold me up, and AA works in weird ways. A girl told me that we could date if I worked the steps. Sponsor. What's up with this four-step? Let's get to it, you know. He didn't care what the motivation was. He just wanted me to get better, and I got to writing. You know, I wrote my four-step on my 25th birthday in about 2.5 hours. That's nothing. I have friends that have wrote their four-steps in the middle of a desert in a war zone and done their fifth step in a room with 40 other guys listening. So if you haven't done your fourth or fifth step, I don't know what your excuse is, you know. I did mine because I heard a lot about the four-step in those meetings I was going to, and they talked about how people that stick around, they do a fourth and fifth step, and people that don't stick around, we go to their funerals, you know. And I didn't believe the funeral part. I didn't think this thing was that lethal, you know. But I start going through the steps with Stan and get all the way through them, and I start sponsoring guys around, like, you know, 2.5 months sober, something crazy like that. You know, and I had commitments. I took from 12 days sober, the guy over there by the door, he was sober at the time and had the Riverside Juvenile Badass Kid commitment, you know, and got me to go in there at 12 days sober and went with me a couple more weeks, and then he just stopped showing up. And, you know, that's why I sponsor him today, you know. I did that commitment for a year, and I would try to get guys to go there. Be like, hey, you want to speak Wednesday night? And you know, alcoholics, like, hey, you want to speak? Hell yeah, I want to speak. You know, we sound good. Where at? Riverside. Oh man, I got to do my hair. You know, it was like that, man. It was like pulling teeth. So I practiced telling my story in there. You know what I mean? I told my story for like a year in that place. I loved it. I loved it. I got to go in there and just, you know, those kids would bow up to me, and I'd bow up right back. You know, and let them know, hey, I know what the hell you're talking about. You know, now calm down. Let's heart to heart. We can do that. We're men. You know. And did that stuff and you know, all kinds of things. But I don't know, somewhere along the line, Stan's life just didn't become appealing to me anymore, is the truth. And I got a new sponsor, and I heard it somewhere that the way that I should pick a sponsor was if I woke up in his bed with his life, his shoes, everything, would I be okay with it? And if I was okay with it, that's the guy I'm looking for. I don't think that's necessary. You know what I mean? It just so happened to be that was the case with Ryan. You know, and he's a little rich Jewish kid from Davis Island, never been in a fight in his life. You know what I mean? Worst fight ever. He dumped a bird bath on his head. Like nothing like me, nothing like me at all. And you know, I looked up to him when we went through the steps, when we started reading the big book and talking about alcoholism and all that stuff, and like the thoughts and the absurd actions that we take, I related to him on a gut level, you know. And then we got a house on Davis Island. Me and Blair and Justin and Stan and Lloyd got this house. Lloyd lived there for like a week or two or something like that. He couldn't take it. I don't blame him. You know, Lloyd was the only grown up in the house at the time. But you know, we had people over every single night. You know, it became the place to go. It became the hang. You know, every night, didn't matter what meeting you went to. You went to the doghouse afterwards. We burned stuff in the backyard that we weren't supposed to burn. You know, and we watched people do fourth, I don't know how many fourth and fifth steps were done at that house. We had guys, you know, these guys that came in homeless with nowhere to go, not a pot to piss in. And we had couches in the living room for them. We had so many couches for those guys. And, you know, we had a lot of rules. We had a place to get sober, you know, and I miss that place dearly, you know, but I wouldn't trade my life today for it, for anything. But, you know, so we got all that going on, and I met my fiance back there. I don't know if we met there, but we started talking back there. That's the first time I've said my fiance. It's pretty cool. So we started talking back there, and we got to know each other. You know, I thought she was getting sober at the time, but she wasn't. She was just... she was playing sober, you know. I'll tell you what, man, she was doing more to help people than a lot of people I know that are sober, so whatever, you know. My perception of AA has been changed a lot recently, but, we fell in love, man, is the deal. And we've had a lot of ups and downs and twists and turns and all that stuff. And, I've gotten to watch her grow up close, you know. And a lot of the reason that I'm here and have grown in the way I am is not just because of the times that she pushed me and supported me, but some of the hardships that we've gone through that have made me grow, you know, closer to you guys and closer to God. And, you know, so to say, like, the woman of my dreams that I love with everything I can is, like, she actually wants something to do with me. That's mind blowing, you know. I love to take credit for that, but I attribute that to you guys, you know, to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and that being played out in real life, you know. That's why I'm here. That's the truth. And when my dad was here, when I celebrated 1 year sober, I introduced my speaker and went and sat down next to him, and he put his hand on my leg and he had tears in his eyes and he said, "I'm proud of you." And first time I can ever remember that happening. You know, I had some good baseball games. I remember I threw a two-hitter. For people that don't know baseball, it's really good, right? And both hits were like, shouldn't even been hits. And after the game, I'm pumped. I feel great about myself, right? And he goes, "You hung your curveball. That's not good if you don't know baseball." So, no, I'm proud of you. No, good job. Just like, you suck, you know? So I'm sitting in here a year sober, like, knowing, like, this wasn't my idea. You know what I mean? Like, I was hurting so bad that I was willing to do whatever the heck these people told me to do, Dad, you know? But he doesn't know that. All he knows is that Alcoholics Anonymous works miracles in people's lives, including his. He doesn't stay up any night worried about his little boy, you know? He knows where I'm going to be and when I'm going to be there and how I'm going to be doing it, you know? My sister's the same way. My sister knows that she doesn't got to worry about me anymore. She bailed me out of jail so many times. She was the one that fielded the 3, 4 a.m. drunk calls, you know, after I got beat up or something like that. She doesn't worry about me anymore. And like I said, me and my little kid, man, we're best friends. You know, he's known about me wanting to ask Justin to marry me for a while. He's kept his mouth shut, and every time I picked him up, he lives out in Newport Richey, so I drive an hour out there, right? And I get him, and he gets in the car, and he goes, "Did you ask her yet?" And I'm like, "No, Jay, not yet." Come on, man. You know, every single time, you know? And, 10-year-old just keeping his mouth shut, and he's so excited about it, you know, because he loves Alcoholics Anonymous. He lives with us during the summers now, so he comes here every Thursday night, and I stick headphones in his ears and make him play music because I don't need him to hear the shit we talk about. But and the bad thing is that we laugh about it, right? So, like, "Oh, I pooped my pants." Ha ha ha. 10-year-old, you know? I don't want that, you know? So, but he knows what you guys did. He knows better than anybody what you guys have done, you know, because his dad's in his life. You know, not just financially. That shit doesn't matter. That doesn't even matter. I show up when I say I'm going to be there. You know what I mean? He knows I'm going to be there. He knows he can be honest with me, you know? We talk about life, and last summer, he started asking me to pray with him at night every once in a while. It wasn't every night, but a couple nights, he was like, "Will you pray with me?" You know, and I was like, "What? Where did you learn that?" You know? And the only prayer he knows, he like mumbles the Father's prayer, or our Father. He can like make his mouth do the same motions, but he doesn't know exactly what they're saying, so he just makes the noises while I pray, you know? But I'll tell you what, man, if that doesn't do it for me, I don't know what does. You know, that's it, you know? I got this little kid that loves Alcoholics Anonymous. I got, you know, this gorgeous woman that loves Alcoholics Anonymous. I got this family that loves Alcoholics Anonymous. And I get to show up and, you know, run my mouth every once in a while, you know? And I'm going to say no to that? You got to be kidding me. Like, this is the best deal I've ever gotten, you know? Couldn't imagine a better deal. But, you know, I show up to detox every once in a while. You know, I'm involved with Thicky Paw. I go to Men's Advance. Take my sobriety very seriously. It means the world to me, you know? And some of the stuff that I've gotten to watch as a result, I've gotten to watch people when they say, "I'm going to have a kid," I go, "Oh, shit," you know? And they're amazing parents, you know? I've gotten to watch guys, you know, some stay, some don't, you know? I've watched a lot of guys not make it. That's when it became real. I think I had 7 months sober, and my friend Peter, Man, he was more active than me. Peter like talked me through my four step, right? Showed me how to do it, told me how to write it. I didn't really understand what the big book or my sponsor was saying. Peter sat down and he showed me his. He was like, look, here's the columns. This is what you know who you're mad at? Yeah, write that down. You know why you're mad at him? Hell yeah, I know why I'm mad at him. Are you kidding me? Write it down. Okay. You know, Peter showed me how to do a four step, and I don't know what the hell happened. I wish I did. You know, Peter went to a meeting, he talked to a sponsor, he hung out with his best friends, he went to the casino, he didn't wake up the next day. You know? Alcoholism's quick. That's not what I'm scared of, though. I'm scared. I got a guy he's trying to drink himself to death, and he can't. You know? I feel like that. God feels the same way about me. He's not going to let him die, right? This guy's going through hell and back, and just miserable. And that's what I'm scared of. That's what I don't want anything to do with. Problem is, that fear is not sufficient to keep me sober. I need the 12 steps. I got to have a spiritual experience in my life, and I have to do something to help grow that. So I work with new guys, you know what I mean? I try to give them as much of my attention and time as possible. My life today looks like I'm a full-time employee. My job is Alcoholics Anonymous is there, you know what I mean? My grand sponsor is sitting right next to me, you know, which is awesome. I think I do a good job. I think they like me, you know. So I work full-time. I take 2 or 3 classes a semester depending on how hard they are and insane I'm going. I sponsor guys whenever they ask. I do AA, you know, whenever it walks up in the parking lot and asks me to speak, or hey, can you do this detox, or this, that, or the other thing, whatever. I do what I can there, and I try to live my life as principled as I possibly can. It takes a lot of help from my sponsor and from my friends. You know, I need a lot of help from them to keep me on track with that stuff, and I haven't done it anywhere near good, you know, in my opinion. Made a lot of mistakes. So the good news in from what I've learned in AA is that your motives to get sober and get better don't matter. Doing this thing perfectly doesn't matter. What you expect to get out of this thing doesn't matter, because you're going to get something far beyond that. You know, that's been my experience. I've gotten something far beyond that. I guess, I think I always close with this when I speak here. I owe everything in my life to you guys, to this group in particular, you know. And I don't know where I would have been if I wasn't standing out in that parking lot the first night here and Steven was here. And I know Steven since T-ball, you know. And you guys picked me up and carried me, you know what I mean, and put me on a path behind giants, you know. Just said, hey, walk that path. That one, not any other one. Don't get clever around here. We used to talk about dummy up a lot, you know what I mean? Just dummy up. And I knew what that meant, so I dummied up. I just did what you guys told me to do and what you guys did. I followed you guys around, and today I don't think I was ever supposed to drive when I got sober. I got this big ass truck. I can haul all kinds of new guys around, so if you need a ride, let me know. You know, we're moving into a house, you know. Fuck, my life's crazy. It's nothing what I ever expected it to be, and it's all because of you guys, you know. So I can't ever thank you enough for giving me this life. You know, the only thing I can try to do is pass it on to somebody else. That's my sponsor always tells me, that's why I'm here, that's why you're at the meeting. You're not at the meeting to feel better, you're not at the meeting to get something out of it, you're not at the meeting because you relate, you're at the meeting to help somebody, to pass it along. So I try to do that whenever I get here and any other meeting. So I'm done. Thank you.